Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Dr. Brucht. Although a bit belated, and we have people who have reached out to us, where is the discussion about the Sfarim Moed Katan? So here we are. Let's discuss today the name of the Masechta we find in Rishonim, who call it by another name. We're going to discuss about Rashi. If you have the new Eiz V'Hadar Gemara, you see there's a Rashi in Ksav Yad, which to me has been very helpful. We're going to discuss Rishonim. We're going to have a discussion today about Machon Harry Fishel. We're also going to discuss Chol HaMoed, Shemitah, however, very important, the discussions about the Sfarim and Avelos and whether the discussion out there about people who are mefak fake and learning Moed Katan because it's Avelos, talks about Misa. That's a Mitzvah Shem going to be a separate discussion, which we hope to be able to provide in the next week or two. Rabbi Brucht, how are you today?
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem.
Okay, so let's get going with the name of the Masechta.
Okay, so first we have... Most people know the Masechta as its name, Moed Katan. However, we find that some people refer to it as Masechtas Mashkin. Okay, now, so first, one Ramatis Yoros Trashon points to a Rambam that refers to it as, I think he calls, says the Rambam refers to it in some places as Masechtas Mashkin. But the Ali Tamar, from which I've quoted in the past, on Moed Katan, he has a piece where he shows that it's possible, some people actually called it even Moed, not as Moed Katan, not as Mashkin. Okay. However, the question is, I'm mentioning that people call it Mashkin, who calls it Mashkin, and what is even the significance of calling it Mashkin? So as interesting as it is, as boring as it is, it might sound, a fellow, Yaakov Spiegel, wrote a book, wrote many books actually, but one of his books is called Amudim Betolda Sefer HaEvri. Just to see it, it looks like this. And in one of the volumes, he has a bunch of pages where he literally checked how numerous Rishonim refer to the Masechta. And he comes to the conclusion that Ashkenaz Rishonim, many of them call it Moed Katan. Provence Rishonim call Moed Katan, Svarg Rishonim some call Moed Katan. Sometimes you'll find that they do call it Mashkin, as I mentioned earlier. Matis Yoros Trashon points to some Rambams, and then he says that we do find, for example, Rishonim of Italy, they many times refer to it as Mashkin. Okay, you'll ask me why in the world is this important. I'll just mention very briefly. Sometimes, especially in more recent years, you want to uncover, we find a manuscript and we don't know who it is. Doesn't have any, and but it's believed to be a Rishon. We don't know, we simply don't, it doesn't say on the manuscript who it was or who wrote it. So people who try to figure this out, they try to look for all types of clues to identify the author. Sometimes these type of clues could help narrow down the search. For example, if let's say we see that the whole time he's referring to Moed Katan as Mashkin, it might help to look, oh, he might be an Italian Rishon, and then somehow through that, it might narrow down the searches to figure it out. But okay, this is just a side point, just to begin the discussion of today about Moed Katan.
Okay, excellent. So now let's get to Rashi. I know we had a discussion about Rashi when we were discussing Maseches Tainis, but I think in Moed Katan the discussion is a little more in depth and more wide ranging.
Correct. So to say at the outset, I am definitely not going to spend the next 2 hours to speak and mention all the different possibilities and the back and forths about it, but I will try in the next few minutes to briefly mention some of the highlights of the discussions about this fascinating question. Okay, so first thing to mention is that as opposed to any other Masechta, there are other Masechtas, we discussed Tainus earlier, that there's discussions about it, but this Moed Katan has the most discussion about it with different possibilities about it. Who it could be, which we'll see right now. And not only that, many people feel that they actually did find the right Rashi on Moed Katan, whereas, let's say, some other Masechtas, where once it became proven that it's not necessarily Rashi, they never found the Rashi on the Masechta, which could mean that he didn't write it on those Masechtas. Anyway, here are the basic ideas about this topic. Number one, the printing press was first invented in the 1440s. The first Talmud was printed pretty much as a whole Talmud was by Cincino in the 1480s. Then the next time the whole Gemara is printed is by Bramberg in the 1520s, and Masechtas Ma'ariv Katan is printed in 1521 or 1522. Okay. Right away, both of these shasin that existed, they included Rashi. Where did they get Rashi from? Okay, so there were existing manuscripts that were out there that they made sure to get to use when they were printing their various Talmuds. Now, for hundreds of years, no one said boo about Rashi on Ma'ariv Katan. So far, the earliest that I'm able to discover that someone even says anything about it, that it's problematic, it might not be him, is the Radal. The Radal, Radavid Luria, in his Perek Derabbi Elazar, he has an amazing Hagdama, a few different Hagdamas, in the middle of a discussion. He says, Rashi on the Rif is the real Rashi on Ma'ariv Katan, and what's on the Gemara is not Rashi, but it's a different parish from an Ashkenazi Rishon. That's what he says. He does not explain why. He says that in my notes on Ma'ariv Katan, I explain more about it, but sadly, we don't have his notes on Ma'ariv Katan. Okay. Now, the Netziv in Emek Shela also says, like you should know, at least two places I found, he says that the Rashi on Ma'ariv Katan is not, on the side of the Gemara is not Rashi, whereas the Rif, the Rashi on the Rif, is Rashi. I'll explain it in a minute, drop more about this. And so too, another person, we'll discuss more about him shortly, Rabbi Yehuda Epstein, he also, in his Sefer Minchas Yehuda, he comes to the same conclusion, and he says, I came across the Radal. Now, I'm not sure what it is that, because none of them elaborate why, and why is it that no one up till this period of time of the 1850s said anything about it? So much so that even a drop earlier than the 1850s, a work that only came to print in the early 1900s, but it was written by someone that was a chaver of the Pasa Shulchan, and he was in Eretz Yisrael with the Pasa Shulchan, that would date him, that this work seemed to have been written in the 1830s. And he talks about a topic which we'll also, Meretz Hashem, discuss later on today, about shaving on Chol HaMoed. In the beginning of his conversation, where he wrote this small little chibra on the topic, he starts talking about Rashi on Ma'ariv Katan, and he says, Rashi, you have to be medayik in every single word, every letter of Rashi, because we know there's nothing extra in Rashi, and it's ein l'davar soif how deep it is. So it's ironic that he says those words on Rashi on Ma'ariv Katan. So it seems no one really knew before the 1850s anything about that there's problems with Rashi. Now, another interesting source is the Keren Ira, who also wrote a very important work on Ma'ariv Katan. Derech Agav, he's talking about a Rashi, and he says maybe it's a Tai Sefer, and then he says maybe you could fix the Tai Sefer, and then he says I'm Rashi in the Rif, and he doesn't explain anything. Like, why is he showing you the Rashi in the Rif? Now, to elaborate, a drop more. In general, we know everyone opens up the Gemara and you see then the back there's Rashi on the Rif. Now, somebody even asked me, what is Rashi on the Rif? So for most Masechtas, it's not considered a Rashi. Rashi didn't write on the Rif. It seems that in most Masechtas, that at some point in time, in the late Rishayim period of time, Rif became more used than Gemara. People were learning Rif, not Gemara. Sometimes some people attribute it to the fact that there were burnings of Talmud and Rif was allowed to be around, so they adapted so they took Rashi and they didn't bring all of Rashi, but they took parts of Rashi that relate to the Rif, and some people, we don't even know who they are, and they put it around the Rif. But in general, it's a question if we rely on it, how reliable is it? Was it completely tampered? But for some reason, Ma'ariv Katan, as I already am telling you, the Radal, the Netziv, the Minchas Yehuda, they say Rashi on the Rif on Ma'ariv Katan is real Rashi. Now, I don't know how they know that, but that's what they say. Okay, another interesting point is that, which will also play out soon, is the Maratz Chayus, who we said by Masechtas Tainus, he was the first person to say that Tainus might not be Rashi. He says that if you look in the Ein Yankov, also you'll see a lot of pieces of Rashi that he does not find in the Rashi on the printed Shas Vilna. Actually, he didn't use the Shas Vilna before, but it's not there. What's going on? So he's also pointing out that there's different Rashis that the printed one on the side of your Gemara that I'm saying is already from the first printings of Cincino and Bamberg, and they're not. They're in the Ein Yankov in the name of Rashi, because the Ein Yankov, when he wrote his Pirish, he put on the side Rashi, but he doesn't. But he, a lot of his Rashis that he has is not going to be found in your standard Rashi on the Masechta. Okay, he just points it out. He doesn't know what's Pshat. Okay, fast forward 2 years later, after the Radal, we said is 1852, a fellow named Yaakov Reifman writes a whole article in German, and he says that Rashi Amar Katan is not Rashi. Who does he say it is? Rabbeinu Gershom Aragayla, the famous Rabbeinu Gershom Aragayla, one of the Gedolei early Rishonim. And he lists out his proofs in this article written in German, and that's 1854. Okay. A few years go by, and a fellow named Radavid Ber Tzember, who was a Talmud of the Aruch Lener, writes a small booklet where he discusses Rashi on Nedarim and Amar Katan. He comes out against this Reifman, and he concludes that Rashi on the riff on this Masechta is the real Rashi, but he says the Rashi on the side of the Gemara is also real Rashi. It's just an earlier version, so all the problems that might come up, it's not such a big deal. Rashi updated his Pirish. That's the one on the riff. So the riff, when you open up your Gemara and you use the riff Rashi, that's the most updated Rashi, whereas the one on the side of your Gemara, that's Rashi, but it's an earlier edition. Okay, this is going with an assumption that many people have, that Rashi wrote various additions to his Pirish. Okay. Now, this is, I said, is in 1867. 1869, Reb Nosson David Rabinovich, the Baal Diktukei Seifrim, put out his work of Diktukei Seifrim on Masechtas of Beya, and then around then he also did Ma'il Katan and Chagiga. In the introduction, he says, as a matter of, like, he doesn't say why, but he says, by the way, Rashi, what do I use for Rashi on this Masechta Ma'id Katan? I use a Pirish of Rabbeinu Gershom that I have. And, he uses a manuscript, and he also says that what we have on the side is not Rashi, in the standard versions of your regular Gemara, that is written by who? Rabbeinu Gershom. This is a similar conclusion to what I said earlier from Yaakov Reifman. But he says this himself. Okay, comes along this Dov Ber Tzember, and he writes a whole book, a small book, and he's very sharp against Nosson David Rabinovich. They have to understand, they don't just write a claim. They literally go through all the Rashis on the Masechta, pointing out all different problems, and he's very upset. And he says, I don't understand. First of all, it's not true. It's really Rashi. And then he's also upset that the Diktukei Seifrim doesn't even bother to mention his work. He says, you know me, and whatever. Okay. The Diktukei Seifrim writes back about it, and he ends up writing also a small work about this subject to prove his method. And he says that anyone who reads Rashi Amar Katan, it's a matter of a feel. If you're familiar with Rashi, you will be able to pick up. It's not the same language as Rashi and Ganshas. Obviously, not everyone is able to do that, but let's say someone like the Diktukei Seifrim and others, they had this chush, they were able to pick up. It's not Rashi. Nothing more to discuss. It's not Rashi. Is it someone close to Rashi? Maybe, yeah, but it's not Rashi. Rashi had a certain amazing kayach of tziva that no one was able to mimic. They even say, there's an old Messiah everyone heard growing up this, I'm sure, that they say, that Rashi's Einiklach said that we could mimic, I think Rabbeinu Tam said it, or if not the Rashbam said it, one of them said, to mimic Rashi's Pirish on Chumash we could, but Rashi on Shas, impossible. I think, but maybe I'm mixing it up. But anyway, the point is that Rashi's Pirish on Shas is impossible. It's written and it's a unique thing. No Rishon was ever able to come to write such a unique Pirish with such a... Part of the uniqueness is also with the such a small amount of words to the exact points. Anyway, the Diktukei Seifrim says, sorry, I disagree with you. And then he apologizes to him for not mentioning him in his work. And that's beyond the scope of this thing, but fine. So far we've reached to, at this point, we're holding in 1869, and we have a few different opinions out there what's going on. Fine. Fast forward. The question is, what in the world is the Dukduke Sefer referring to when he says it's Rabbeinu Gersh Meir Goyla? What's going on over here? So if you open up Yeshas Vilna, you'll see in various Masechtas and Shas, they have on the side a pirish called Rabbeinu Gersh Meir Goyla. What happened is the Shas Vilna, when they were printing the Shas, they wanted to get you to buy their Shas. So they went and they hunted down Perushim of all types, Rishonim and Achronim, that they could find in various places, in various collections. Lamasha Rabbeinu Chananel, they put on the side. And so too, Rabbeinu Gersh Meir Goyla. They tracked it down and they put it on certain Masechtas on the side. This is in the 1880s. Comes along 1896, and a fellow, a very learned person, Avram Epstein, he writes an in-depth article in German where he says, it's not Rabbeinu Gersh Meir Goyla. And who is it? He calls it Pirush Megenza, which basically means Talmidim of this of Rabbeinu Gersh Meir Goyla, but it's not Rabbeinu Gersh Meir Goyla. He outlines this, a very in-depth article. Luckily, I don't read German, but it was translated into Hebrew a few years back, and you can read it easily in this Hebrew version. It was printed in a journal called Netuim. Okay, now his findings were accepted today that Perushim that are under the name Rabbeinu Gersh Meir Goyla are really Pirush Megenza, it's called. Okay, but it's not far away from Rashi. This is basically a generation before Rashi. People that Rashi ended up, couldn't even met some of them, are people that are writing these Perushim on some of the Masechtas. And one such Masechta is Ma'ir Katan, what we have on the side of our Gemara. Okay, some people throw out, it could be Avram Epstein throws this out as a possibility, others run with this later on, some people go with this, it might really be Rabbi Yochum. Others say maybe Rabbi Yochum was involved with the parish, but it's not strictly Rabbi Yochum, it's a bunch of people writing it, whatever it is. Okay, but it's not Rabbeinu, but the point is, at this point we're holding that in 1896, the conclusion is it's not Rabbeinu Gersh Meir Goyla, but it's an Ashkenaz parish that is a little before Rashi. Okay, fine. Fast forward to 1939, a great Talmud Chacham named Ramar Chazak, so he prints a Pirush, and he calls it Pirush Masechtas Mashkin, which is, we already mentioned the name, of one of the Rishonim, and then he writes in his Agdama, I now found this is the real Rashi on Ma'ir Katan. Okay. And he proves it based on various proofs of introduction, like people do in their introduction. Comes along Rav Shlomi Yosef Zevin in his book reviews, that came out, I believe, 2 years later, around that time. And he writes that it's a great pirush. He's not buying into the fact that it's Rashi. You don't have enough proof that it's Rashi. He's melamed, it's chus. Maybe it is Rashi if you go with Hanacha that Rashi wrote many maduras. Maybe it's a madura of Rashi, but he's not going with that. Okay, fine. Great. So now we're holding 1939. Another possibility has been thrown out there. Fine. Fast forward to 1961. In 1961, a fellow, a Talmud, a Chashev, a Talmud of Ramei Arik, but then he, to put it mildly, went different ways. World War II tragedies also got involved with that. His name was Ephraim Kufifer, a tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham, who was prolific, wrote a lot in Polish about Yiddish history, Jewish history, and also in Hebrew, printed tons of manuscripts. He discovered in 1961 what he claimed to be the Rashi on Masechtas Ma'ir Katan. He found this based on a manuscript that he worked in the manuscript room in Hebrew University, and he proves Barichos in his Agdama based on various things such as many quotes of Rishonim in the name of Rashi on the Masechta that are not found in the Rashi on the side of the Gemara are found in this manuscript. And he has other proofs, and he comes to the conclusion in 1961, I found Rashi. Now, this Rashi, for example, so it's not only an academic, this academic Ephraim Kufifer holds like this. Rav David Tzvi Hillman, who's a famous person, legendary Talmud Chacham that was a Kanoi, but he was prolific also. He's one of the people that worked on various projects, such as the Shapsi Frankel Rambam, the Mafteches, and the text. It was a big bucky and all different things. Tremendous Talmud Chacham, put out many Rishonim. He went through very carefully the Rashi Ma'ir Katan. He says Rashi Ma'ir Katan is not a Rashi. He comes to the conclusion, he says it might even be Amaritz was the one who worked on it because there's too many stiras. Let me say the final editor, let me say it could be this really, that's in Parish is not a problem, but someone tampered with it a lot and that person messed up. He says, but what is the Rashi? This edition from this Ephraim Kufifer is the real Rashi. And he just understand, even though he was a Talmud Chacham, but he had this ability of picking up all these types of things. He's legendary in various aspects that he had this type of chosh, and he says it's real Rashi. And then he says it would be a great chosh if someone went ahead and reprinted the Shas and did it on the side with this Rashi. That's what he says. Another Chashev Talmud Chacham that comes to the same conclusion, also tremendous Baki Talmud Chacham Niflo, who's still alive, Rabbi Akachaim Seifer, he also says Kufr's edition is the real Rashi. So now, if you want to get a hold of a copy of Kufr's edition, you could go to Hebrew Books. They have it. It was printed by Machon Mekitzin or Damim. A different time, maybe we'll talk about it. Okay. Art Scroll, Shas, and Oiz V'Hadr Shas, on the side of their Gemara, have a Rashi Miksav Yad. What's the Rashi Miksav Yad? The Kufr edition. The only difference is, Art Scroll says in Agdama that it's from Kufr. Oiz V'Hadr doesn't. I don't know why not. Maybe early editions Oiz V'Hadr did. I'm not sure. A friend of mine told me that he wrote to Reb Chaim Kanievsky about that he saw in a Gemara that used Kufr's edition without thanking him, and it gave Hakaras HaTorah to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. So Kilu, he had some type of taina to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Reb Chaim Kanievsky wrote to him. I have nothing to do with the decisions, what goes on in the printing of the Gemara. But the point is that these Gedolim, these Chasheva people felt that Rashi is from, that the Kufr edition is Rashi. Yeah.
Amazing. Wow. Just following the history of how this is fascinating. But isn't the Art Scroll print? Is the Art Scroll print edition Oiz V'Hadr?
Yeah, but they
read Oiz V'Hadr. They just...
They have some type of deal. I don't know what the deal was. Yes, it has to. It is from Oiz V'Hadr. The difference is, but they write Hagdama. They both write Hagdamas, and they think that's the whole difference. Okay. Anyway, the story. We're reaching to the conclusion because of time, but I just want to ask three, four more points about it. So you would think 1961. This guy proves it. He proves it very well, and Rabbi Chaim Seifer deals with it, and what's his name, and Rabbi David C. Hillman. You would think you'll be finished. The story's over. No, the story's not over. Of course, various people check in depth. At least 3-4 different academics went through this biyun, and they came to the conclusions it's not. And they okay, fine. Then a work came out, Mamish, in 2007. A fellow from Bar Ilan went through this sugya of Rashi and Marikatam Bi'il. Mamish, every tag shebatag of Rashi and the manuscripts, he comes to the conclusion this Kufr is 100% right. But he proves it, and obviously time will not allow to go through it. His name is Yaakov Fuchs. Excellent job proving beyond the shadow of a doubt that Rashi on the side, which in the if you're using Art Scroll or Oiz V'Hadr called Ksav Yad, or you could go to Hebrew Books and get the actual thing, Kufr, it is the real Rashi. And he deals with all the issues that were raised over the time about Rashi on the Masechta. Just to mention, two last points. One that he deals with is as follows. They made someone found in the late 70s a major discovery of people always want to know how the Talmud was printed and when was it first printed. So I mentioned to you the dates that I mentioned was 1480s and then the 1520s. Was there any other editions? So it seemed that this was called a bibliographical mystery. They didn't know, and then suddenly in 1970 they knew something, but they weren't sure. And then 1979, amazing discovery was discovered of a bunch of fragment pieces of pieces of Gemara that were printed in places in Spanish countries, in Spanish places that were not known up till now. What was interesting is that this is in the 1480s, and it might even been the earliest printing of the Talmud. Just we didn't know about it because the mamish were almost all destroyed, because right then these Yidden in Portugal and everything, they were chased out of their lands. So almost everything was destroyed. Miraculously, they discovered stuff. What happened is these Gemara pieces that they have, some of them have Rashi on the side. And it turns out it's very daima to the Kufr Rashi. So we say there's further evidence that this Rashi existed, and the Italian printers, the Heiner Sensino and Bramberg, when they printed it in the 1480s and 1520s, they didn't know about this Rashi for some reason. But anyway, okay, this was a discovery based on works of a fellow, Chaim Dimitrovsky, And this Yaakov Fuchs deals with it at length. Now, just to end this thing, this part of the discussion, there's a fellow Yosef Keller. He put out a Rashi on Ma'id Katan, also based on Kufr and more. It's also available on Hebrew Books, and his Rashi. And the last step, the last point about Rashi, to conclude with this, because it's just very interesting, I reached out to, there's some academics in Bar Ilan that have made some incredible, I call it science fiction programs, that they are able to identify, based, it has to meet certain criteria, but they're able to identify works. Sometimes we're not sure if it's a certain work. Sometimes a tshuva of the Rajba could really be it's the Ramban. They have a whole sophisticated computer program and has to meet specific criteria, as I said, but they to identify if it really might be the Rajba, it might be the Ramban. And they through this tools, they have been able to identify some things. Not everything are they able to. So I sent them, I asked them, could you check, and what's the story with Rashi and Ma'id Katan? So they spent a lot of time trying to, based on what they have, because they didn't have in the computers, in their, in Word and in their computer system, they didn't have the Kufr edition, and they don't have all the things, but they did conclude that it's very, it's not conclusive Rashi on Tainis if you compare it to other Masechtas, but there are certain things, certain characteristics that only appear in Rashi, Ma'id Katan and stuff like that. This is a fellow Moshe Kopel and Avi Schmidman. They were very kind enough to run this through their programs. And Mirza Shem eventually taking all the tools that are out there and the conclusions of about Rashi, such as, let's say, this Fuchs fellow and others, eventually we probably will be able to come to a more accurate, based on computers also, of various Masechtas, if it's Rashi or not. Okay, Adkan, on the as I say, just a very bekitzer, I apologize for so short, about Rashi on the Masechta.
Beautiful. Really, really fascinating. Okay, so let's move right along to the Rishonim. I'm sure there are some of the classic Rishonim, not that many Rishonim on Ma'id Katan. So what could you add?
Okay, so first I'm gonna throw out there very fast, we'll go through this very quickly. Number one, a lost Rishon that seems to have played a major role in the Rishonim. This was brought to my attention by my uncle Rabbi Spitz, is the Ravid. It's a lost Rishon. You check into it, you'll see that the Ravid appears to have written on Ma'id Katan, and Rishonim had it and used it a lot. Just not, which is not so. Let me say that Rishonim that normally quote the Raiva quoted is one thing that you'll find even in this Masechta, but you'll find even the Tosis Rush quotes the Raiva something like 75 times in this Masechta, which is unusual. But we don't have the Raiva, it got lost over time. Why that is a different story. Okay, we'll discuss some of the Rishonim we'll discuss in part two when we talk about Avelis, but let's the Chida. I referred to last time the Chida as a list of what's the Rishonim on the Masechta, and he lists out in different Masechtas which Rishonim. Ma'id Katan, he lists you one Rishon, the Ritva. Okay. Now, the Ritva wasn't so common. Already I found that the Hamek Shela is Miyashiv, that someone asks Akasha, the Bach asks Akasha on a smack, and he says if he would have had the Ritva, he would have realized it's not Akasha. But even the Ritva wasn't so common. Also, interestingly, is there's a Tosis Rid, which is printed in the 1860s with Chashav Haskama the Shalomeshiv, with Ha'aris. But even though the Chida uses the Rid a lot, I don't know why he didn't mention it on this Masechta. Okay. So at this point, if we're going and we're focusing on the 1860s, already up to the 1860s, there's literally almost no Rishonim on the Masechta. What changes? What changes is in the 1930s, something happens, and a bunch of Svarim suddenly come to print in 1937, I believe. What happened? So many people have heard, you know, there's different Machons. Today, everyone hears Meisir of Kook and Machon Yerushalayim. An early Machon, which still exists and does still put out stuff once in a while, it's called Machon Harry Fischel. So this Harry Fischel, he was a gvir. He supported a lot of institutions. In the 1920s, he came to Eretz Yisrael and he funds a building of a beautiful house and Beis Medrash for Rav Kook, which still exists till today. In the 1927, he realizes he only has daughters. There's not going to be a shame. His name is not going to have a future. He wants to have a kium of his name for the future. He has a meeting with Rav Kook. This is 1927. They come to the conclusion they should open up an institute for Tyra, to train people, that they'll also put out works, etc., etc. Okay, Rav Kook heads this organization. They build it. They have a bunch of different people come from all over to try to join. They pick out they pick out from, I think it was 50 different people that tried to apply. They pick out, after extensive testing, oral and written. There was 102 applicants. 52 came back for the oral. This Harry Fischel wrote a part of an autobiography. And Mekitzer, at the end, 18 people pass. These people end up working in the Machon. And fine, he discusses at length about it. Okay. Now, 1935, so this Machon's going on for a few years. 1935, Rav Kook is very, very sick. It's right before he dies. He realizes that they're going to need someone to run the Machon. So they hire the very well-known person, Rochelle Lieberman. And Rochelle Lieberman becomes the head of the Machon, and he's the person in charge. And they start continue working on different projects because Rav Kook was not able to, he was very sick already at the time. Now, when Rav Kook, we know already from the few years before, Rav Kook, when he created this Machon, they had outlined a bunch of projects. And there's even a Sefer HaYoivel that came out, L'chvoid, one of Harry Fischel's visits, discussing all the projects that Rav Kook was working on and others were working on until Rav Kook died. Okay. Rav Kook dies. They decide to put out Svarim, Amayit Katan, from manuscript that didn't exist up till now. The first parish that they put out is a Meiri. It was never printed on Amayit Katan before. They put out the Chedushei Haran. They put out a Taisus Rush. And then they put out a Sefer called, they call it the Shita L'Talmud Bichil Miparis. Okay? So basically what happens is, in one period of time, the people of this Machon, funded by Harry Fischel, L'Chvoid, in the year that Rav Kook is Nifter, footnoted and everything, they put out these four Rishonim. They're all available on Hebrew books. And they've been reprinted a few times with footnotes done properly based on the manuscripts. So already in one quick year, you got four Rishonim knocked off. Okay, 1957, a fellow Rabbi Mirsky puts out a Rima Lunil, another Rishon, also a Ma'akot. So you already got already a few more. So far in the 50s, you're already able to learn more. Okay, we fast forward to 1966, a Machon Talmud Yisraeli puts out a bunch of Rishonim Amayit Katan. They put out, just to list them, they put out a Rabbeinu Gershom Aragoila. Turns out, this Rabbeinu Gershom Aragoila, relating to our discussion earlier with Rashi, that's going to fit into that whole story. We won't get into it. They put out the Taisus Rid based on manuscripts, although I mentioned Taisus Rid was printed, but they redo it. They put out a Likutim of a Sefer Aner, a Talmud of a Talmud of the Rajba, and some other material on the Masechta, a nice fat volume on the Masechta. I think it actually might still be available for purchase. So basically, the world of Rishonim suddenly in the 60s explodes. And one last thing just to mention, as far as 2021, the Kaivitz Yerushasenu, someone prints an article based on manuscripts of Rabbi Chilmi Pariz Amayit Katan. I had just mentioned that Machon Talmud Yisraeli printed something from Rabbi Chilmi Pariz. This is another Pirish. This might be actually him. That might be a Talmud, but they're from the same school. Anyway, bottom line is, Ad Kan Rishonim, there's more Rishonim. We're just mentioning some about them on the Masechta. That's the story for Rishonim for right now.
Rabbi Eliezer, after you finish giving these historical backgrounds and all the proliferation of Rishonim, I feel like the Yemenis are going to need more time of their day to start learning B'in.
Baruch Hashem, that's the idea. That's the idea.
Okay, fine. So now that we're going to have more time in our day to learn Rishonim, maybe we'll find a few more minutes to learn Achrayim. What Achrayim are there? What are the modern day Svarim?
Okay, so we'll do this very fast. So first, we've already discussed on Tainus that there's a Sefer, a Chash of a Sefer, one of the Gedolei Achrayim, the Keren Ira. So he also has a very thorough Sefer on Mayit Katan. Another Sefer that's written really on Shas, but he has a nice amount of Mayit Katan also, worth mentioning, is his name's Rabbi Yehuda Epstein. He wrote a Sefer called Minchas Yehuda. He was zeicha to learn Shas b'chavrusa with the Nachos David. He learned in Valajan, but he was rich. And he was also, at some point, he learned b'chavrusa Shas with the Nachos David, which is a remarkable thing. Nachos David is a Talmud Muvik of Rechaim Valajan. This Sefer is fascinating on many different fronts, but what's important for us is it talks about Mayit Katan. I believe it's available on Hebrew books also. Another Litvish sefer, not much is known about the author, is a sefer called Taisus Aaron. It's also available on Hebrew Books. Very unique sefer, has very chashuv askamas of Litvish contemporaries of his, and the sefer is unique because he also talks. He was also into Kabbalah, and he also had great havana in areas relating to astronomy. He also has a little bit on Rosh Hashanah. He talks about. Anyway, he has a nice amount of Ma'akaton, a nice sefer to check out. And then there's two achronim of achronim before we get to more contemporary. Number one is a sefer called Ksinus Pasim. Ksinus Pasim was written by a great Gaon, also a Valajner, Talmud. And this great Gaon, his name was Rabbi Yaakov Mipadua. And he was prolific. It was a chashuv Talmud of Rabbi Chaim Valajner. And he wrote on the Nemuke Yosef, because it's the Nemuke Yosef on the side of the, in the back of the Rif. So some people say it's actually the Ran, and a lot of Masechtas is always a big tumult. Is it the Ran? Is it Nemuke Yosef? And that's its own big discussion. For my Katan, he says it's a Davar Pashut. He wrote a whole sefer on various Masechtas of the Nemuke Yosef called the Ksinus Pasim. And he says as a Davar Pashut that the sefer on the back of the Gemara, it's the Nemuke Yosef. And that's also available, also on Hebrew Books. Now, just to mention with him a fascinating story I recently put together, like this. There's a book, an incredible book. Growing up in yeshiva, my Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Zalig Epstein, was very fond of quoting this book. It's called Hagadol Miminsk. This is how it looks. It's a book about the Ar Gadol, the Minsker Gadol. Now, what's significant about this book, it's not like most Gedolim books, is that the author was a Talmud Chacham that knew his subject, the Minsker Gadol, well. He lived in his house for a few years. He was the Melamed of the Minsker Gadol's children for a few years. Some of them ended up becoming tremendous Talmud Chacham. And the book is full of unbelievable insight and stories about Litta and other things. And here he has a story about the Minsker Gadol when he's very young. And he's a tremendous Baal Kishron. And he's learning in shuls. He was learning in various shuls, and he was very let down. He felt, he was, let's say, 10, 12 years old, and he felt that the Mahal Halima that people were learning, they were learning, but he didn't like it. It just wasn't talking to him. People were breaking their heads, spending full days learning the Mashah, and a line in a Taisus or something, and he didn't go for it. And his father was nervous. His father wasn't a Talmud Chacham. And his father was very nervous. So he brought him to this author of the Ksinus Pasim. And he brought his son to him, and he had a whole conversation with him. And he said to him, and the Minsker Gadol, in this book, it records this whole back and forth that he had with the Ksinus Pasim. And the Minsker Gadol says that sometimes you can have a conversation with someone that's a game changer for the rest of your life. This conversation that he had with this Gadol, the Ksinus Pasim, changed him. And what he said was, in short, it's written very well as a side, besides for the book being an excellent book and reliable, it's extremely well written. It's so well written that the author was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Sometimes it's very hard to even understand his language, because the author was a Merdek, a Bucky in the Hebrew language. There's tons and tons of footnotes. They had to give it out to tremendous Talmud Chacham to figure out what it meant. Anyway, make a long story short, what was the story? What does he tell this young Minsker Gadol? He wasn't the Minsker Gadol at the time. He says that sometimes it's true, you shouldn't break your head the whole day learning a Marsha, but it's still important to learn some. That's how you open up your mind, so to speak. You have to spend some time on let's say the Marsha as an example, because after you get familiar breaking your head with the Lashon, then later on it will be much easier to learn it. And there are many important ones, but. So there has to be like some middle ground, but you have to spend time on it. And he says, let me show you an example. He pulls him out of Nemuki Yosef. He says, look at this piece of Nemuki Yosef. So the Minsker Gadol says a pshat. And he says, no, it's not true. He says, it's a good pshat, but if you understand the signon, the lashon of the Nemuki Yosef, which I'm now telling you, he was the author of the work on the Nemuki Yosef called Ksinus Pasim, you'll understand not. And he shows the Minsker Gadol, and the Minsker Gadol says, and he convinces Minsker Gadol, and then whatever. Okay, the rest is, as they say, is history. Okay, one last work on Masechtas Ma'akaton is a sefer called Matzeves Maisha. This work is also by Litvish Gadol, this Litvish Gadol wrote many svarim on Masechtos and Shas. His name was Ramesha Betzal Luria. He wrote on Sukkah, Ma'ikatan Yavamas, and a bunch of other Masechtos. Prolific. He also wrote a sefer on the Rakanti and the Tashbits. In manuscript, he left behind a sefer on the Parnas, which only a few years ago came out via Mechon Yerushalayim. They finally printed it. Now, the Matzeves Moshe was printed after he died. His son printed it. It was printed in 1924. Just one fascinating piece of information that the son writes in this Hagdama. He says, my father was a very gifted Talmud Chacham. It seems he was a very big, smart Bal Kishrin. And it seems that in the town where he was, the Maskilim got to him, and he was learning with them already, and and it seems they almost got him. I mean to say, and I guess they told him he's going to be a great professor. Something happened, and Baruch Hashem, he left, and he ended up going to Valozhin. He ends up learning in Valozhin. He ends up having to do Rav Yitzchak Chanan, and he gets a shteller, and becomes a great Rav and a prolific writer. And what's interesting, you always hear about certain people, they say about different people, oh, they had some type of story. They have some type of story with Haskalah. Here's one that his son is writing about him, and he successfully won, and he became the great Gaon and prolific writer. Okay, now just to conclude very fast, is that Masechtas Ma'akatan, people always complain that we don't have I don't mention contemporary Sfarim, so let's just fast mention. First is a sefer, Ha'aris of Rabbi Eliashiv, very, very good. There's also a sefer of Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach Shiurim and notes on the Masechta, very useful. Another sefer is Magidim Chadashim. I happen to enjoy the sefer a lot, but Amir Tzashem will discuss him more when we get to Masechtas Chagiga, Bli Neder. And now, to conclude, the contemporary topics of the Masechta. So the Meiri already writes, which people know very well, Masechta deals with Chol Hamoed and Avelus, and then Shvius gets mixed in. So for Chol Hamoed, just to mention it, I don't want to get shot over here. Number one, the Sefer on the Masechta, which I believe Artscroll recently reprinted it, but it was printed in the 70s, in the early 70s, or in 1981, from Rav David Zucker and Rav Moshe Francis, called Chol Hamoed. Artscroll reissued it. It has tons of, it was always considered the Sefer on the Masechta. Not the Sefer on the Masechta, the Sefer on Hilchas Chol Hamoed. Also has very reliable Pesukim. Many psukim from Rav Moshe and from the Debre Tzina. Okay, that's one contemporary sefer on the Masechta, on the topic of Chol Hamoed. Another sefer is the Kutei Halachos on Chol Hamoed from Rav Shapsi Vidiger. Also another important sefer. Another sefer to mention is Rav Yukasil Farkas, wrote a sefer called Chol Hamoed Kilchasai. And there are many others, not to take away from them, I just can't list them all. And then, as Chol Hamoed and related to this Masechta, there's controversies like everything else in Halacha. So just to point out two Sfarim on that. One is shaving on Chol Hamoed. Everyone knows, a big tumult about it. So there's a beautiful Sefer from Meir Ben Yo called Giluach on Chol Hamoed. One last Sefer relating to Chol Hamoed is a massive Sefer. Seeing is believing. So they say it's this fat. It is, it's called Shor Sheh Minhag Ashkenaz. What is it about? It is 916 pages about the topic of wearing tefillin on Chol Hamoed. Fascinating, fascinating topic. Also relates to our Masechta, the Raya, some of the Raya. Okay, fine. Now, that is the Svarim relating to Chol Hamoed. I'd just like to conclude, because it gets in the Derech Agav, and because we're in the year of Shemitah, I'm not going to speak about Barichos. I feel we have to list them, some of them. Basically, a few Shemitahs ago, I walked into a Sfarim store in Eretz Yisrael, and I said, how many Sfarim are there out in Shemitah? He said, they just began, and we have over 75. And this was not even a big Sfarim store. Today, if you go into anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, Sfarim come out every other day about Shemitah still, and they're still coming out. I'm not aware of any recent bibliographies collecting all this, just to mention, because it relates a little bit over here. So for me, I'm in Eretz Yisrael, it's Shtikl and Yonah D'Yayma. I'm just going to spend 1 minute listing some names. Number one, Ada Yoim, one of the best essays, is an essay from Rezevin in Lar Halacha. It just gives you a background. From the classical Svarim, Rav Kook's Mishavas Ha'aretz, Archa Shulchan Ha'asid, the Chazon Ish, the Pasa Shulchan, there's an edition that has the Ritbaz's Ha'aretz, very important. Of course, we can't go without mentioning the Madani Arz of Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Incredible, incredible sefer. Of course, at one point it was printed to change it a little bit, and then it was to kilu kasher it up, and then later on it was more released in the proper edition. Fine. Derech Hamunah of Reb Chaim Kanievsky, it's being learned here, Yom V'Laila, everyone, and it's an incredible work. You have the works of Kalman Kahana. We have the famous sefer Shmita from Rav Tukashinsky. Of course, it goes on and on and on. Contemporary and new works keep on coming out. They just recently put out Rav Yosef Engel Sefer. They reissued the Har Tzvi from Tzvi Pesach Frank's material, Rav Avadia Yosef. They made a new edition of all his Tyrus on Shemitah. A friend of mine, Rebellia Greenzweig, they also just collected his essays on Shemitah. And to conclude about history, about a week, a new Sefer that somehow it has some connection to me is supposed to be coming out from manuscript of Rav Reines on Shemitah that was never printed before. And just to conclude with history, there's an excellent sefer, two volumes so far, from Boaz Hutner called Ubashana Hashvius. Looks like this. It's a fascinating two fat volumes on the topics of Shemitah. And also there's the essays, could be found online, of Eitam Henkin Hashem Yinkam Domai on the topics of Shemitah, available to read and get some information about it. That ad kan, part one on the Amarikatan.
Wow, amazing. And you're not going to mention any Shemitah controversies? Or we're out of time.
No, we're out of time. So I already stuck it in Derech a loophole. So to go into it out of sight, ad kan.
Okay, Yashar Koyach, Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Brutt. Let's look forward the next week or two on the edition, specifically on Avelos. Everybody, continue learning by Katan, don't stop, and we'll hear what Rebbe Eliezer has to say on Avelos.